everyone. Welcome to episode 74 of Beyond Diet Podcast, the podcast that will give you the truth, knowledge, and information so that you can get into the best shape ever. Hi, my name is Dan Rodriguez, and joining me this evening is Dr. Ann Kultz, better known as Dr. Ann. How are you, Dr. Ann?
I'm great, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I tell you, it's February. Valentine's is around the corner. Can you believe
right.
it? Can you? How do we go from Christmas? You know, how do we go from the holidays to now like Valentine's and,
right.
and almost like...
And dark chocolate though, right?
Oh, yeah, the dark chocolate. You know, just the hope and glimpse of maybe spring. Although I got to tell you, here in Michigan, because I'm in Michigan and you're in South Carolina, the weather here in Michigan this winter... Can't complain.
Mild. We've had an extraordinarily mild winter. We had a record high on Sunday of 81 degrees.
Wow.
How about that? Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing.
I got to tell you, I was in your neck of the woods just a couple of weeks ago. I drove to Florida and I passed through South Carolina. I got to tell you, it's pretty country out there.
It is. We're a beautiful state. And I live on the coast in Charleston, which is especially beautiful. So,
wow. Okay. So pretty fortunate. Okay. So, you know, in this episode, we are going to talk about how to improve your love life. What foods can help, you know, since Valentine is around the corner, what foods can diet or foods can help you to actually improve your love life? What can you do? Exercise, does it make a difference? Talk to us, Dr. Ann.
Sure.
How can I improve my love life?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure people know that the state of your health and your lifestyle practices can have a profound impact on your love life. Because the reality is, much of it's just black and white physiology. And to have a healthy, normal sexual response requires a healthy neurologic system and then a healthy cardiovascular system. So those are the two systems in the body that are fundamentally important to having a normal sexual response. And unfortunately, because of our unhealthy lifestyles, poor diets, weight gain, you know, sedentary lifestyles, we have many, many people, unfortunately, that do not have the sexual pleasure they could have because they are indeed living such unhealthy lifestyles. Let me just quote a study from Duke. So this was a Duke University study that looked at sexual function and enjoyment of sex life in a large group of people. And lo and behold, what they found out was that obesity, which we have so many people, over a third of our population now is in the obese range. Obesity greatly harms sex life. Let me give you perspective. Of the obese folks in this study, two-thirds of obese people reported significant sexual impairment in at least one of four areas. Compared with, that was in contrast to just 5% of people that were normal weight. And in some cases, obese people are 25 times more likely to report sexual problems. So, you know, let's think of all the different ways that being obese could influence sexual activity. Well, first of all, it does a doozy on your arteries. And we know that you have better sex and blood flow are, hello, I mean, they're like the same thing. You've got to have good blood flow to have a normal and a healthy sexual response. And if you're overweight, it frequently means that you've got diseased arteries, right? Think of the risk factors that go with obesity that harm arteries: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome. The other thing is just a self-esteem issue. If you don't feel good about yourself, frankly, I don't think you're as good in the sack. And
yeah,
I think the self-esteem issue is likely a big problem. And then also, again, it's also blood flow to the brain. The brain is the, you know, sort of the master controller of sexual functions, all sorts of hormonal mechanisms at play that involve the brain releasing the right things and the brain requires that same blood flow just as your sexual organs do. So really, really important. And I don't think one thing that I like about this whole concept of the sex thing is it tends to push people's buttons. And I'm like, I'm always after whatever it takes to get people to sort of jump on the healthy bandwagon. And if it means knowing that your sex life may be that much better, well then, you know, go for it.
Right.
Because that's just the reality.
So anybody that wants to be a, you know, like a sexy animal, they better listen up, right? I mean, you're going to really discuss
it's not rocket science. It's pretty straightforward stuff.
So,
and you know, diet, let's talk about diet.
Yeah, let's talk about
specific aspects of diet that are important for a healthy sexual response. And again, you have to think about blood flow and healthy brain and neurologic system. So you think, well, what foods are good for those things? So one of the big things that pops up food wise is those monounsaturated fats. So that's the healthy fats like extra virgin olive oil, canola oil, nuts and seeds, and avocados. And they're important because they promote healthy blood flow. These fats guard, protect, and improve the function of your arteries. We know that. And they do it through a number of different mechanisms. And in addition, many of those fatty foods I just reeled off, especially avocados, nuts and seeds, extra virgin olive oil, also have very valuable plant compounds, antioxidant plant compounds, anti-inflammatory plant compounds that are fantastic for artery health and brain health. The second big category of foods that comes to mind are fruits and vegetables. And there are really, three big reasons why fruits and vegetables are so vital and important and valuable for sexual function. The first is, you know, they're filled with nutrients, vitamins, minerals, many of which are, you know, play a role in blood vessel health and brain health, right? So your brain needs these things. Your blood vessels needs these nutrients to function properly. The other thing is how fruits and vegetables can improve blood flow and cardiovascular health. And they do it through, again, I mean, like 6 or 7 or 8 different ways. And then lastly, how they help you with body weight. It is absolutely, you know, it's incredibly compelling. The healthier your body weight, typically the healthier your sexual response, and vice versa. And fruits and vegetables are sort of the, you know, mega stars when it comes to foods that help us fight fat. The more you eat of them, the skinnier you'll be.
Okay, because I mean, when you say fruits and vegetables, that's a very vague statement.
Well,
I mean, are there particular ones that are more inclined or powerful?
Probably the more deeply colored fruits and vegetables have an edge, but for the most part, I'm talking about really any fruit, really any non-starchy vegetables. That's like the non-potato vegetables,
right?
The non-white potato vegetables, right?
Right, right.
You know, so you know,
some people think
fruits-wise, it's apples and berries and cherries and citrus and cantaloupe and kiwi, mango. Vegetables, it's, you know, dark leafy greens, red bell peppers, orange bell peppers, broccoli, you know, carrots. I mean, just all of those non-white potato vegetables are great.
So, I mean, because I don't know where the heck I've heard. You've heard, you know, of a potato being a vegetable and some people consider ketchup because it's made from tomatoes.
Ketchup's technically, you're right. I'm talking about the real things. I'm talking about, you know, fruits and vegetables, courtesy of Mother Nature, not, you know, processed varieties of those things, and not like juice that says, oh, contains one serving of vegetables. That doesn't count. I'm talking about the real thing. Yeah, it's very important.
Okay. And how about when you talked about fat? I mean, I know that we've mentioned this before. Fat's got such a negative connotation where, you know, fat makes you fat, or so we think, right?
Right. And yeah, thankfully, I think most people are aware now that, you know, have your fat and eat it too, for goodness sakes, but make sure it's the right kind of fat, because we now know that there really is no place for low fat diets. I mean, they taste bad. There's absolutely no evidence that they have any significant health benefits. And for those of us that know nutrition, it's very clear why, because the right fats, which are those omega-3 fats, like the fats that are in, say, oily fish and walnuts and whole soy foods, are amongst some of the most powerful foods on the planet to guard and protect your health, especially cardiovascular health and brain health. In fact, let's go ahead and that's going to be the next big category of important foods for a healthy sexual sex life and a love life are those omega-3 fats. And they're not found in very many foods, tragically, as a result of how we grow and produce our food. And it's a significant problem. So people need to know where they can get those fats so they can be proactive in seeking them out. Because trust me, you're not going to be getting enough of them unless you know where to find them and actively seek them out. So oily fish like salmon, tuna, mackerel, sardines, lake trout. You can get smaller amounts in really any seafood, but the amount you get in oily fish is just so significant. Then you can also find those very special fats in omega-3 fortified eggs. You get these at all grocery outlets now, and you just look for omega-3 on the package. Then the plant-based forms of omega-3 are going to be walnuts, chia seeds, flax seeds, whole soy foods. There's a small amounts in really any dark leafy green. So they're very, very, very important because they are the brain's most highest quality building material. Okay, so that's really important. We've already talked about the importance of a healthy brain for healthy sex. Then the other thing about those omega-3 fats is they provide 7 separate benefits for your heart and your arteries. So they are really, really very special foods. Omega-3 fats, you got to get those.
So, okay, so I mean, can you get too much of it? I mean, is it, would no. you would you think, I mean.
Never from diet, no, there's no way. So the average American probably gets no more than, in a day, probably less than 100 milligrams a day of omega-3 fats. And most experts like me, maybe 150 milligrams again, maybe. Most experts like me, nutrition experts, would recommend that people ideally should be getting about 1,000 milligrams a day of those long-chain omega-3 fats, which are called DHA and EPA. And it's estimated that our hunter-gatherer ancestors consumed about 5,000 milligrams a day.
Wow.
Because they were, just because the kind of diet they ate and because those fats were more plentiful in the kind of foods they ate back then, so.
Wow.
No, so you can't get too much omega-3 fats from your food. No way.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's really, it's just a change of, I guess, a paradigm shift or a mindset change as far as with fat. I know we've had this discussion, but that's definitely really good to know. So what are some of the signs, like some signs that you may or may not be obvious? Like, for example, you know, there's a huge problem in this country with erectile dysfunction, you know.
Exactly.
And there's a quick...
Some of the most common causes of erectile dysfunction are unhealthy arteries.
Well, so I mean,
folks,
there's a pill for that,
unfortunately, have heart disease, they have type 2 diabetes, they have metabolic syndrome, and their arteries don't work right, so their genitalia don't get blood flow that is required to have an erection. And anyway, and thankfully there are medications that are effective.
But I mean, okay, so if I'm having, you know, that type of problem, if I go to a doctor, you know, that doctor is going to say, hey, okay, let me prescribe you some Viagra. I mean,
right. I'll give you some promising advice. So we have studies, and we can take men that are having sexual dysfunction, especially overweight men. And in one study, one third of them could totally reverse their erectile dysfunction simply by losing weight as a result of exercise and healthy eating. In fact, I'm looking at a headline right now, lose weight, enjoy a better sex life. Even moderate weight loss reduced complaints of feeling sexually unattractive and led to improved desire. And then, I mean, I have several in my hands. There's no question about it that you can indeed, and you know, what's the message we need to get out there to people? Here's another one. Sex life can improve when obese men lose weight. Nearly a third regain normal sexual functioning after participating in a weight loss program. So how great is that? You know, I say you got the power. You know, you want it back, you can get it back. And it may mean, you know, some physical activity and changing your diet and getting some weight off, but if that motivates you to do those things, which have so many other benefits besides those for your love life, then do it. Yeah.
So what about, let's talk about the some foods that I don't know if it's, mm-hmm. if it's for real or not. You know, I mean, we all hear that some certain foods are kind of like have an aphrodisiac effect, like raw oysters. I mean, how true is that?
Yeah, that's sort of an old, those are sort of what I guess you call urban myths.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I will tell you that one of the nitrates are found in nitrites or can be naturally occurring compounds in foods that dilate blood vessels. And it's good to know that dark leafy greens and beets are particularly high in nitrates. In other words, I'm real aware of the foods that boost blood flow because it's so good for lots of things, not just sexual function. It's great for, you know, just boosting energy. It's great for brain function. And so foods that have a lot of nitrates, which are going to be dark leafy greens, beets, are, we think, very special because that's a substance that is a precursor to the substance that allows your arteries to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And the other sort of thing that people should know is L-arginine. That's an amino acid. And L-arginine is the precursor for your body's formation of nitrate, which your body uses nitrate to open up blood vessels. So the thinking is that if you eat foods high in L-arginine, it can, you know, perhaps help you with your blood flow. And good examples of foods that have L-arginine are seafood and nuts and whole grains. So there may be some value in focusing on foods high in L-arginine and or nitrate because we think they're particularly good at helping kind of boost blood flow acutely.
Okay, that makes sense.
And a couple of the foods that come to mind are dark chocolate and green tea.
That's the other
and
one.
And again, yeah. They have very, very potent antioxidant chemicals called flavonoids. And what happens with these flavonoids is they tend to make the cells that line your arteries, which are called the endothelial cells. And endothelial cells that line your arteries are sort of the CEOs of blood flow. So they basically kind of run the, you know, or the running the machines that allow blood to get, you know, blood flow to increase or decrease. And when you make them happy, they increase blood flow and they love, what makes them happy is antioxidants. So green tea, white tea, dark chocolate are really, really high in the kind of antioxidants that your blood vessel cells love. And then the other side of this whole conversation as far as food nutrition and sexual response is knowing that they're absolutely what I would call sex-busting foods. So trans fats, which thankfully are really – have almost left the diet scene, but they're still around there a little bit. So these are those artificial man-made fats that are found in processed foods that contain a partially hydrogenated oil. They will do a dirty number on your blood vessels and blood flow as saturated fats. Those are four-legged fats. So that's like your, all you men out there, like the greasy steaks, red meat, beef, pork, and lamb, especially fatty cuts, and then cheese, and then whole dairy products like ice cream. Those foods are not good for your arteries. So, you know, steaks are sexy, guys, or not. and then refined carbs. So the great white hazards, white flour products, white rice, white potatoes, and of course, probably one of the worst things for your arteries, the only right behind trans fats is sugar. This is a really, really, really big developing story. The public is largely in the dark about the adverse effects, the toxic effects of sugar, especially on metabolic and cardiovascular health. And so that's important. Salt's also bad. Salt can a high salt meal, a single high salt meal can acutely diminish blood flow. We can measure that. We can do studies.
Really?
Where we give people a meal that has the 1,500 milligrams of sodium, which is actually pretty common in a fast food meal. And we measured their blood flow with scientific instruments 30 minutes and 60 minutes later, and there's a significant decrease. And we think it's the sodium in that case.
Does it matter? I mean, what salt you use? I mean, because they have different types of salt. They've got sea salt.
Well, it's the sodium of the salt that is the problem. And there may be some salts out there that you get more flavor with less. So they're in, you know, but it's not like there's certain salts that are healthier. I mean, they all have sodium.
It's the sodium component of the salt that makes it
dangerous. Sodium component of the salt. But if you can use a certain kind of salt where less tastes like more, well, there's value in that. But there's not like, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, you know, sea salt is, you know, healthy for them. I mean, it's not. It's just that you may be able to get by using less because it tends to have a little bit more of a salty flavor.
No, that makes sense. How about for blood flow, since it's so important, how about spicy food? How about spices? Like,
you know, herbs and spices are very special. I talk about them all the time. And what makes them special, and you know, really all of them, they all have unique features, but they all are uniquely high in phytochemicals. And that's what gives them their pungent flavor and their odor. And phytochemicals are sort of Mother Nature's drugs. Many of them have very potent antioxidant, anti-inflammatory effects. That's the biggest thing we like about them is those two features, which kind of go hand in hand and work very good. They're, you know, decreased oxidation, decreased inflammation, those are both very valuable things you want in the body. And herbs and spices are really underappreciated and I think underutilized for their value for health. So just get in the habit of using them often and liberally. And they can be dried, it can be fresh, it can be powdered. You know, we use them like crazy. Like tonight, let's see, we just had dinner. We had some chopped fresh parsley. We had garlic. I mean, usually we have just so many herbs and spices in the way we cook. Tonight was a little bit of a more bland meal. We had some oregano. But you want to do them. And they're all good. You know, garlic, ginger, cinnamon, rosemary, sage, and they're all great.
So how about food that's like literally hot, like some hot peppers and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Hot foods are great for a lot of reasons. And I'm very enthusiastic about hot foods. It's funny. The more you do them, the more you crave them and want them. One of the things about hot foods, you know, again, so like the wasabi mustards and chili peppers and the dried chili powders, I mean, any super hot food, a couple things to know about them. So they give you a little mental lift. And the way they do that is they stimulate the pain receptors in your mouth, which then causes the release of your brain's natural feel-good hormone, which is endorphins. Endorphins, you know, are our body's sort of natural form of like morphine. And hot foods trigger the release of endorphins. You probably noticed that. I used to notice before I knew that scientific reality, I used to always notice after sushi, because I always use a lot of wasabi, I always felt good. Well, it's because I was getting that lift from the endorphins because of that wasabi. And there's evidence they have pain-relieving properties. There's evidence that they can help kick up your metabolic rate a little bit. So hot, spicy things are awesome. They're great. And they also add flavor to your food without adding calories. In fact, I wanted some the green Tabasco on my rice. We had some brown rice with peas as part of our meal. And we eat so much of it, we were out of it, and I was mad. So I had to use some horseradish sauce. Instead.
It is good. No, that Tabasco sauce is pretty good.
I love it.
Yeah. I like Frank's red hot sauce.
Yeah, there's so many good hot sauces. And I also like the Asian garlic hot chili sauces. Oh, I love those.
Yeah. It does make things taste pretty good. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about, okay, so if you're starting to get signs of ED, I mean, that's a good sign that you're probably having issues with your arteries? I mean, that's
probably there's certainly, and we want listeners to know, there's certainly a whole host of underlying causes of ED. I mean, it could be, you know, completely a psychological phenomenon. It could be a medical condition. It could be prescription related to your prescription drugs. So the most important thing is if you're worried that you're having that, is to get a medical evaluation, because many times it can be a reversible cause. And that's certainly something that you want to address. But you're right. For many people, probably for most men that have ED, it is because they have unhealthy arteries, and you just cannot get blood flow to the penis without those arteries being healthy. You know, they're smoking, they're overweight, they have high cholesterol, they may have diabetes. I mean, all those things that we know affect the health of those arteries.
How about stress and rest? I mean, how critical is that when it comes to...
Very important. Very important. And that kind of gets... I was going to try to work that whole thing in. That's the other thing about being healthy and being fit and eating healthy, is you are more... you feel more vital. You have more energy. And, you know, when I talk to patients and even girlfriends, it's amazing how commonly you hear just fatigue is the reason for, you know, reduced sexual desire. They're just tired. And you know, when you're tired, your sexual desire is just not there.
Is that the number one complaint that you hear a lot with your patients?
Oh, yeah. Very, very common with women is just a sense of, you know, I'm just tired. It doesn't interest me because I'm too tired. So that gets back to, okay, why are we tired? Is it, you know, are we not sleeping well? Are we not sleeping enough? Are we stressed out? And stress, you know, I notice this myself in my own life, stress is also just very distracting. You know, you just, it's hard to relax when you're stressed. So I do think stress can be a big interference. As can lack of sleep, as can, you know, just, you know, poor living in general. But that's an important point, because I do think we have lots of overly stressed people, and it's all sorts of ways. It's not just psychologically that stress makes you more feel for fatigue. You know, it has a metabolic effect. Stress can increase your cortisol levels, which can promote insulin resistance, which is horrible for the cells that line your artery and can ultimately, you know, damage your arteries. So, yeah, stress is not good.
One thing, I want to backtrack just a little bit on one of the things that you said. You talked about soy being really healthy, you know, as far as being...
Whole soy foods. Yeah, whole soy foods are wonderful foods. They're highly nutritious.
But
they do provide omega-3 fats, yeah.
But the thing is, what I hear is, I hear the good and bad things about soy. You know, you hear...
You're hearing the spin.
The spin, yeah. The spin on soy. Yeah, yeah. Oh, don't eat it because it's
hello, give me a break.
It's got estrogen
in it.
Give me a break.
I will set people straight here. Okay. Whole soy foods. I'm not talking about soy powders. I'm not talking about soy bars. I'm not talking about soy supplements. Whole soy foods, which are edamame, tempeh, tofu, soy milk, roasted soy nuts, have an exemplary nutritional profile. You know, they're actually a legume, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at their overall nutritional profile, they're arguably the healthiest of all legumes. And legumes are already off the charts as far as their nutritional makeup. Excellent source of minerals, B vitamins, fiber, and whole soy foods also have omega-3 fats, which is very, very unique and wonderful. They have all those essential amino acids. And there is solid evidence that they benefit the cardiovascular system. It's not anything dramatic, but we do have studies that show they're beneficial there. And there is lots of population evidence that people that consume whole soy foods over their lifetime get less cancer. And, you know, so the people that, you know, think that consuming whole soy foods as part of a balanced diet has any risk, I mean, it's just preposterous. Look at the Asian populations. They consume 10 to 15 times more soy foods than we do. And they have way less breast cancer, way less prostate cancer, way less of almost any cancer except gastric cancer. And that's because they do get that one because they do so much salt. Anyway, so it's just ridiculous for someone to be worried about whole soy foods in the context of a balanced diet. I'm not talking about eating like 10 servings every day and not eating anything else. So I'm talking about, you know, as part of a balanced diet. I would way much prefer my daughters to use, which both of them do, soy milk on their cereal than cow's milk. Are you kidding me? That's like, it's not even a contest there. And the latest data is even for breast cancer survivors. The Asians did a study. Women that had the most soy breast cancer survivors that got the most soy foods did better than those that got the least. So there is a lot of spin out there with soy. And the basis of the spin is likely from those in the dairy industry that have, you know, been very threatened by soy milk now being put right on the grocery shelf next to cow's milk. And I can tell you, it's decreased their, you know, more people are using soy milk. Certainly what I drink.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So you drink soy then? Mm-hmm. Soy milk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like tempeh and soy nuts. And I don't love tofu. You know, I don't buy it. I don't really love it. But tempeh is usually in my refrigerator. I get dry roasted soy nuts. Edamame is always in my freezer. And soy milk is always in my refrigerator.
You know, tofu is so, you know, it's bland. You can basically turn it to whatever
anything you want.
Yeah.
And I don't mind it when someone else has prepared it, but you know, I'm a big cook and I don't consider myself good with tofu.
Got it. Okay. Okay. And, what other tips, let's talk a little bit about, you said exercising and I know we've talked about exercise before, but
yeah, exercise is really important. I mean, that might be, if all the things you can do to have a healthy sex life, exercise is probably the number one thing you can do. No question about it. Well, I mean, gosh, think of all the reasons. Exercise improves the health of your arteries through probably so many ways we don't even know them all. But lots of different ways. It helps you with weight control. We've talked about the massive impact that being overweight and obese can have on, negative impact can have on sex life. Exercise is incredible for reducing stress. Exercise improves your sleep. Exercise gives you energy. Exercise can make you feel more sexy because you feel like you look better, right?
That's true.
You know, cut muscles and they're taut and they're, you know, it's crazy what exercise can do for sex. It's huge. And I would say it's the number one. There's nothing you could do to improve your sex life like regular physical activity. It beats anything else.
So if I told you, Dr. Ann, hey, you know, I know I'm supposed to exercise. I only got 20, 30 minutes a day. If I told you, hey.
Well, I'm happy with anything.
So 20, 30 minutes a day, I can do it, Dr. Ann, six times a week. What should I do?
I'll probably jump up and down relative to, you know, most people. So what people need to know about exercise is the greatest benefits are in the low end. So if we can take people that are doing nothing and get them even going, you know, 20 minutes, three times a week, those are the people that benefit the most. So the greatest benefits are on the low end of the curve. That's so important for people to know and it should be so motivating to people, right? But so some exercise is better than none, but more is always better than some. So the more you can do, you know, really the better it's going to be. But if it's 30 minutes like a brisk walk, 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, you know, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So consistency is the key, right?
That may not allow for weight loss. It could. It may indeed. But that should be enough to be able to maintain the health of your arteries and do those other things that we want, other things that exercise can do.
And the key is consistency, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. Consistency. Finding what you like, because that's what you're going to stick with. Yeah. And, you know, doing it, get addicted to it. I'm totally addicted to exercise. Oh my gosh. Totally. Yeah, I never miss it. I never miss a day. How about that?
Have you? Yeah, ever. Seriously? Never? I mean, not never. Even.
Nope. Like,
come on. I mean, how about
I'll just tell you, like right now I'm in the midst of using this treatment for precancerous spots you can get on your face. It's just a nice preventative thing for skin cancers. And it's hell to do it, but because I'm on the sabbatical, kind of hiding out writing this book, I thought, you know what, I could do this right now. Because you, and it makes you look awful because it shows up the precancerous spots, so you look like a monster. And when you get, I mean, I'm into the final stages of it. So, you look so bad you can't go in public.
Wow.
And so for me, the bad thing about that is I like to, much of my exercise is done, you know, I go spin or I go swim, so I haven't been able to do that. But I have a spinning bike at home, and I got on it Monday and Tuesday. And I don't know if you know about spinning. It's probably one of the most intense aerobic activities you can do. And, you know, I could do it every day, but I don't want to do it every day.
Right.
So, like, today, I didn't spin, but I did, every 2 hours, I stopped my writing and did yoga for 5 minutes every 2 hours.
Wow.
And then I went on, once it got dark, see, I could go outside because people can't see me. So then when it got dark, I took my dog on a 30-minute walk. And then I'll spin again tomorrow. And I'm hoping Friday I might be able to make it back into the pool that I won't look so much like a monster. But no, I'm someone, I literally exercise every day. And it may not be a hard workout. It usually is. But if it's not a hard workout, it's at least a brisk walk.
So every day, 7 days a
every
week?
Every day of my life. I cannot remember the last day I did not exercise. At least a walk. At least a walk.
So if you're out, like I'm not traveling on business, you're going to make a point.
Man, I make time for it, and there's no flippant excuse.
You start doing jumping jacks.
I watch all those people sitting on their butts. Drives me crazy in airports. I mean, why don't everyone get up and walk around like I do? I walk in the airports. And, you know, I know, sometimes you don't have time. I know that. I know there are times. But there's so much opportunity afforded in an airport to move. You know, always take the steps.
Right.
Never take those things and walk. Don't take the things that make you walk faster. Get out there and walk. Don't take the trains to the terminal. I mean, it's one thing if you're going to miss a flight. I don't want you to miss a flight.
Right.
But, I mean, I watch people, they just go with there's that darn herd mentality in the airport. Everyone just does what everyone else does. And everyone just sits on their butts and eats.
Does that bother you, people that just sit down?
Yeah,
and eat?
I think you know, people should be getting up. I think we need signs out there. Say simple things like, you know, get up and move. It can decrease your risk of cancer. Or get up and take a walk. It can decrease your risk of having a heart attack. It drives me nuts.
Do you think the human body is going to evolve to like, you know, our thighs and butts are just going to be, you know, naturally bigger and wider because we sit down all the time and we eat all the time?
I don't know.
That's not you.
We are certainly a lot bigger than we used to be.
This is true.
Yeah.
How about the book that you're writing? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
This is the third of a trilogy. So I did Eat Right for Life.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out, 2010, year, I don't know, 18 months ago. Then I did Eat Right for Life Cookbook Companion. So it's the basically how to do Eat Right for Life in your home. So what are the breakfasts? What are the lunches? What are the dinners? What is all the kitchen wisdom? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that book. It's an awesome book. And then this one is Eat Right for Life on the Go, which is where I'm going to be covering eating outside of your home. So eating in the real world. And so, you know, 50% of our food dollars are spent that way, and 42% of our calories are now consumed by food made by the hand and the machine of others. So that's what I'm going to be covering in that book.
Oh, yeah.
Eat Life on the Go. So,
you know, one thing I've discussed in this podcast is when you eat out, you know, the people that are working in the kitchen, I guess it all depends on what restaurant, but, you know, most typical restaurants, they have a grill, you know. The cook wants to make his job easier, his or her job easier. So how do you do that? You slap on the grease, because at the end of the day, you do not want to scrape. You want to make your job, you want to wipe. You want to wipe instead of scraping, trust me, instead of scrubbing.
Yeah.
So they'll just load on the grease, and I promise you, eating out will definitely be a lot worse than making your meal at home, because you're not going to make it the same way. They're not thinking about you when they're cooking. They're thinking about themselves and making their lives easier. They're not going to crack eggs and put it on a grill. They're going to open up the fridge, take a carton, pour the egg out. I mean, there's a lot of convenient things that are processed that just really is to cook it quickly, consistently. You know, it's a machine, man. It's a process. So right. Just think about that. You know, exactly. So anyways, I was kind of hoping to answer a question, but we're kind of pushing it on time. I may just squeeze this one if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. And this one is about fasting. And this mm-hmm. one's from Brad Pillon. And he talks about I'm reading here, Brad Pillon. Okay. It's a female. Mm-hmm. And she says she is 5'2", 125 pounds. And she trains 4 times a week and at least 3 times strength training. She's around 23% body fat, and she wants to get down to 20%. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's your point of view on fasting 1 to 2 days a week? Do you think this is going to help her get down? Is this whole fasting thing going to help you get leaner? Weight loss.
So, no, fasting, it's interesting. Fasting, I think, when done correctly and done in people that, you know, don't have any risk from doing it, I think can be profoundly healthy. I mean, it's one of the few things, at least in animals, has been proven to prolong longevity. And there's growing evidence and ongoing studies now in human beings looking at caloric, what we call that caloric restriction, even cutting back, not necessarily fasting, but just cutting back 30%, 20% on your calories over a long period of time. And fasting, I don't consider myself a real expert in fasting. It's not something I routinely recommend.
Do you
but
fast?
I do. I have done it, honestly, in the last year twice, one time on purpose and once because I was having a colonoscopy. And I was kind of, it was intriguing to me. First of all, it gets easier as the day goes on. I mean, once you get past noon, it's like you don't really get any more hungry. I did find going to sleep very challenging. It's hard to go to sleep when you're hungry. I thought that was really, really interesting. But I did, you know, I did sort of feel kind of a neat energy. I don't know how to describe it to you. Uh-huh. I felt some positive sort of vibes in my body. And so we think it can do all sorts of wonderful things. Now, it's not something I necessarily recommend for people that want to lose weight. Uh-huh. I don't know if that's the best strategy for weight loss. I probably would not, that would not be my, you know, standard recommendation or my best advice for someone that wants to shed some weight. I would tell those people, okay, let's see if we can kick up the healthfulness of the diet, because if you do that, usually it means you naturally reduce calories and lose weight. So like really, you know, make sure you do lots of lean protein, a lot of non-starchy vegetables. Those two things are great for appetite control. So if I, like for me, I mean, you know, I know everything about food, nutrition is what I do. So if I ever feel like, and I have to keep my, you know, being a healthy body weight is part of my job description. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to be lean and look good in what I do. And I want to anyway, but it's really important for me. I mean, no one's going to listen to me if I'm overweight. I wouldn't listen to me either if I was. And I weigh myself very regularly because it's one of the most effective things you can do, because scales don't lie. And if you see it going up, you know what you do? You intervene, you do something, you make a change. And so if I ever see that happen, then what I do is it's almost like a modified, I call it like a healthy low carb, where I just do protein, lean protein, like it could be chicken, could be fish, could be eggs, beans, along with lots of non-starchy vegetables, tons, right? Mm-hmm. Like I might do an entire, you know, eat an entire frozen bag of chopped spinach, steam it and you know, top it with, hit it with a little bit of olive oil and lemon, and then top it with some like salmon or something. So I call that sort of healthy modified low carb. And I'll just do that even like a couple of days, 2-3 days, and my scale just pop right back down. Or I'll bump up my exercise a little bit. I mean, I already do so damn much, but I'll just bump it up 5 or 10 more minutes, you know?
Right.
And then that usually takes care of it for me, because I mean, I watch very closely. So if I see it go up even a half a pound, I'll intervene. And that's why I weigh the same. I have four kids. I'm 50. And I weigh the same weight as when I was 17 years old.
That's
and
incredible.
I know I have mass, my more muscle now.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's very impressive.
I have times where I've been a little bit heavier. I got heavier in college, like a lot of people do. It's probably the heaviest in my early 20s.
Probably all the
drinking. And then I have been, you know, I have been that weight. After my fourth baby, I was, you know, within a month, I was what I weigh right now, which is not very much, about 116. So.
Wow. Wow. I think I've lifted a dumbbell heavier than you.
But I'm strong. I'm strong.
Wow. Okay. That's.
I'm doing those push-ups, not yoga.
All right. Well,
right.
Let's go ahead and wrap it up. And, you know, if someone wants to get a hold of you, why don't you give your website, give your.
Sure.
Give all that good
stuff. The
simplest
way to reach me is just Google Dr. Ann, D-R-A-N-N, Dr. Ann. I'll be the first, probably two, if not three links that pop up. And if you want to know my domain, it's www.drannwellness.com, drannwellness.com. But just Google. Yeah. Just Google Dr. Ann, and I have all sorts of wonderful free resources at my website, and I have books and CD, DVDs, and
you got
all
that,
kind of all kind of products.
The newsletter,
and the
can't
newsletter,
forget about that.
Free newsletter is very popular. It's just crazy how many people take that newsletter.
Yeah,
but I put lots of good content in it. I'm finishing up this month right now, so.
You know, that's how I just so you know, Dr. Ann, that's how I heard about you. It was your newsletter. And
good.
it wasn't that I subscribed to it. Someone forwarded to me and I was so blown away. I'm like, whoa, Dr. Ann, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun. So what I do with the newsletter, just to maybe encourage people, you know, I read all these studies all month and I select, wow, which one's the most important for people to know about and which one's going to be, you know, help people the most. And I usually select like, oh, 5, 6, 7. And just write a quick, short little, you know, blurb about the nuts and bolts of what it was is saying to us and what we can do based on what it said. And then I throw in just other great content, like it might be, you know, 7 reasons to exercise if you want to lose weight, or 10 foods that are always in Dr. Rand's refrigerator, or 3 foods you should make sure you eat every day. Just good things like that.
Yeah.
I help people, so.
Well, awesome. Good, good.
Okay.
So, yeah. So,
okay.
Take care, everyone, and thank you so much for listening. And Dr. Ann,
thank you. Thanks for having me, Dan.
So yeah, we'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Stay healthy. All right, bye.
All right.
There's something out there waiting just for you. We've got word on the front line. They want you to. Yourself.